Yeah, man. Wow. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man. Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. That's Fly Jam Bob sending that one out. Little Santana. The song is called Hope You're Feeling Better, and he wants to dedicate it to all the members of the overnight crew who have been sick. Aww. Santana always makes you feel better, unless it's that damn song with that idiot from what the hell is the name of the Three Doors Down? No, what?
Matchbox 20.
Matchbox 20. That Rob Thomas. All right. Hey, welcome back to the show, everybody. Hey, we're going to talk about the most memorable and coolest friends in movies and friends on TV. We're going to get to that in a second. The reason we bring this up is Dr. Sue Varma is a certified psychiatrist, and there's an article here that about the secret to stronger friendship. Try to build better bonds. And here are a couple of rules on how you can build strong friendship. Showing vulnerability levels the playing field, and compliments are one way to do it. Oh. So compliment your friend. Hey, nice feet, or something, you know, like that. That's what Samwise would say to Frodo. Hey, nice feet. It says you become charming by being disarming. You are not a threat. We are constantly sizing people up, trying to find out where we stand in comparison. We are so afraid that complimenting one another somehow makes us appear less than. On the contrary, you endear yourself to the other. So don't be afraid to give compliments. Ask for help and advice makes your friend feel valued. How about that? Hey, I'm wondering what I should do about my feet. I would like your advice, Frodo. Seeking a friend's advice on a job, a trip, a doctor's recommendation makes you feel like a valuable resource. Asking for advice makes them feel in the know and appear humble. People love humble people. And then next is self-disclosure. With the right person strengthens trust and invites the other to do the same, creating a common bond. This is important for friendships. It says, I trust and respect you with what I have to offer, and I value what you think enough to reveal something about myself. That's right. So you say, hey, my feet stink. What should I do, Frodo? And then Frodo can give you advice and go, oh, wow, he shared with me that his feet stink. Often we work too hard to preserve an image of being put together or, quote, having it all. We don't realize that it's through these cracks that the light comes in. Let people into your life by sharing your difficulties. And that's how you sustain a good relationship, according to this psychiatrist. So I think we should all take those pieces of advice to heart. We've already got texts coming in with people with their favorite friends, most memorable friends and best friends in movies and TV. Andrew in Alabama says Four Friends. Well, there you go. There's a movie. That's the movie called Four Friends. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin says Hoss and Little Joe Cartwright from Bonanza. Oh, yeah. 608 area code. In movies in real life, Gale Sayers and Brian Piccolo. Yeah, that's true. According to my friend Mike, it's the only excuse for a man to ever cry is while watching Brian's song. That's the only time a man should ever cry in his life where it's excusable is watching Brian's song. Jay says Mary Clancy, Haley Mills, and Rachel Devery, June Harding in The Trouble with Angels. That's a good one. And then 765 area code says, my favorite movie about friendship is Sideways. That's one of my favorite movies ever. So those are just a few of the texts that are coming in. I got a list here of some of the best friends in movies and TV, and we want to hear from you. And we hope that psychiatrist helped you out with your feet. I don't know. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. News is coming up after this. Yeah. There we go. Triple Play Thursday, man. Yeah, man. Triple Play Thursday. Fly Jam Bob, his second Santana song is Everybody's Everything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 if you would like to get in here. Triple Play Thursday. All right. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are back and we're live and we're talking about the most memorable or the coolest best friends or friends portrayals in movies and TV. 312-981-7200 is the number. Now, obviously, you know, when I was reading that, it was a serious story from an actual psychiatrist about tips on how you can get closer and build bonds with friends. I was mentioning Frodo and Samwise, and you know, when I was thinking about like really great friendships in movies, that was literally the first one that popped into my head was Samwise and Frodo. That was just, it's such a great relationship, and Samwise is just like the greatest guy on the planet, like carrying him at one point, Frodo making sacrifices for him. Samwise is like one of my favorite characters. Sean Astin in that movie, in those movies, is just so great. So that's why I kept going to the references to the feet and to the and to Samwise and Frodo, little hobbits. So Dan, would you throw those two guys in the mix?
Yeah, I mean, that is a pretty iconic friendship, and obviously the last scene of the first movie is one of those moments that, you know, if you were doing a montage at the Oscars of best friendship moments, that would have to be included.
Yeah. So. No question about it. Those were seriously the first guys that popped into my head. I'm looking at this list. Are they even on? They are. They got to be on this.
Yes,
list.
They are.
Oh yeah, there they are. Lord of the Rings trilogy, Sean Astin, Elijah Wood on the list as great best friends. Anything pop into your head immediately, Dan, movie or TV?
Well, two answers. The obvious and the correct answer is from Shawshank Redemption.
Awesome, yes.
Andy and Red, you know, obviously the course of that friendship through the course of the movie is fantastic and obviously pays off pretty huge at the end. But just a personal kind of favorite are the guys from Superbad.
Yeah.
That movie came out right around the time that I was in the like glory with my guy friends. You know, we were all in our mid-20s and doing well enough that we can go out and have a good time with each other. And, you know, just the routine of going over Billy's apartment, having a few cocktails, watching sports, watching music videos,
right,
and then going out and hitting the town and doing various things. And, you know, that the stupidity, but the truth in their friendship was something that I identified a lot with in my relationship with my guy friends at that time.
Yeah. Well, this list that I have is from Empire, and they include Jonah Hill and Michael Cera and Superbad. I'm looking at this. Superbad came out 10 years ago.
It's insane.
One
of the first performance of Academy Award winner Emma Stone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Hey, do you know that all of the leads in Zombieland have been Oscar nominated?
Oh, that's awesome.
All of the leads in Zombieland have been Oscar nominated. Even the cameo, even the surprise cameo.
Very true.
In Zombieland, everybody has been Oscar nominated. And now only one of them has won.
Correct.
Just Emma Stone. She's the only one who's won.
What did Woody get nominated for?
People versus Larry Flint.
Yes, yes.
And I think he was nominated. I think he was nominated for supporting actor as well for something else. But People versus Larry Flint, he was nominated for best actor. So, all right, Esmeralda, did you think of any friends for TV or movies?
For TV, I thought of Troy and Abed from Community.
That's two of my favorites.
Because they're so adorable together.
Yep.
It's too much.
Yep. I totally agree with you. And I can't believe that they didn't make this movie list that we have, or TV list that we have. Because they're just fantastic. Remember when we were talking about nerds, like who were the best nerds?
Mm-hmm.
Those guys were at the top, like near the top of my list.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in a similar vein, what about JD and Turk from Scrubs?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of the same thing.
Very similar. Very similar. Two nerds, you know. Two nerds of different ethnicity being nerdy. And they're really good friends.
And JD really loved Turk.
Yeah, he did. There's no question.
Really loved him.
He really, really loved him. No question about it. Boy, Scrubs was that was a good show. Scrubs was a good show.
I loved Scrubs.
Yeah, that was it was terrific, and it's also terrific because they heartily included Colin Hay in their show, so that makes it even better. Okay, let's see. Two separate texters from the 815 area code said the kids from Stand By Me. Yeah, that's good. That's a good one. The four kids from Stand By Me. 262 area. Oh, one of my favorite movies ever. 262 area code says Breaking Away. That's on my list of the five best guy movies ever made. Esmeralda, have you ever heard my list of the five best guy movies ever made?
No.
And I don't mean stuff like, you know, Terminator and Lethal Weapon. I'm not talking about movies guys should like.
Wait, I think I have, and then there was one on there that I thought was odd, but I can't remember.
Well, there's
now.
A couple on there that people are like, huh? But the five are Breaking Away, which was already mentioned. Diner. And these are the best movies about guys ever made. Breaking Away, Diner. Beautiful Girls. Have you seen Beautiful Girls, Esmeralda?
Oh, a long time ago.
It's Matt Dillon, Michael Rappaport, Natalie Portman, Timothy Hutton. I love it. Fandango is number four on my list. Fandango is one of the first movies Kevin Costner ever made before he became a big dude, 1985. And then finally, Hanging with the Homeboys, which is a terrible title, but a phenomenal movie. So those are the five movies. And just when Hanging with the Homeboys came out, I remember it came out in the fall of 1991. And I remember seeing the ad in the paper, and it was Hanging with the Homeboys. What the hell is this? And it came out in 1991, and that's when, like, you know, hip-hop really started to take off. Public Enemy was, like, at the height of their popularity at that point. And it was right at the time when I was, like, massively into hip-hop. And so I was like, this movie looks terrible. And I remember that it was just the picture of the four actors. There's like four buddies, including John Leguizamo is in it. Mario Joyner is in it. Dougie Doug is in it. And there's these four guys, and they live in the Bronx. And they just take one night, they drive into Manhattan. It all takes place just in one night. So, but the poster for the movie was the four guys on like a porch in New York, you know, like in like a brownstone where there's graffiti all over the place, and they're just kind of on the porch in their early, and you know, like sort of the really weird fashions of the early 90s and late 80s,
mm-hmm.
especially in the world of hip hop and stuff, just like really like the cross color jackets and the whole, you know, that whole thing. So they're dressed like that, and then the catchphrase for the movie was, "It's Friday night, you going out?" Who the hell would see that movie?
It sounds awful.
It's great. It's so honest and so beautiful and really socially aware. Makes a really, you know, interesting, makes many, many interesting statements about, you know, about poverty, about race, about the relationships between men and women, about the way guys act and talk, about being friends, about being different. It is a great movie. And I remember when it came out, it tanked because why would anyone go, hey, it's Friday night, you going out? How does that entice a person to see this movie called Hanging with the Homeboys? So I remember when it came out, I reviewed it on Roy's show, and I went out of my way to say how great it was. I was like, no, please, you got to believe me on this. I know this is an uphill battle for me to try and get you to go see a movie called Hanging with the Homeboys, starring nobody that you know. And at that time, John Leguizamo wasn't as well known as he is now. And Mario Joyner was only known if you watched MTV. He was like a stand-up comedian on MTV quite a bit. But the other guys, he didn't know who they were. And I remember it got this groundswell of support from the critics. I remember Siskel and Ebert did like a special thing that said, hey, this is a really great movie. You need to see it. And people got behind it. The critical world got behind it. A month and a half or 2 months after its initial release, it got a re-release because of the buzz that started on it. And this was really unprecedented. It got a re-release and played in art houses. And the box office was great for it. So when they generally released it in the theaters, you know, people were like, what the hell is this? But then critics got behind it. The studio, which was New Line Cinema at the time, decided that they would, they would advertise it as an art film. And it came back for like a month. It came back in, it played the Fine Arts Theater right down here on Michigan Avenue. And I had never heard of anything like that before, a movie that was generally released, completely forgotten about, and then 2 months later re-released as an art film and did solid numbers in the art houses. So it's a great movie. It's just a great movie, and a great movie about friendship, too, which is what we're talking about. We're talking about great portrayals of memorable friendships in movies and TV. So we got a break here. We got weather and we got traffic, and then we'll get back to it. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Yeah, man. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man. Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. Fly Jam Bob with his third song there from Santana. Well, all right. All right. Our phone number, our text number is 312-981-7200. And we are talking about the most memorable portrayals of friends and best friends in movies and TV. 312-981-7200. Here's a few from the Empire list of best friends in movies. Mike Myers and Dana Carvey in Wayne's World and Wayne's World 2. Yeah, I guess, I mean, sure, that would count. They're best friends. I didn't like the movies very, very much. That was one of those deals. That was one of those deals, like many of the Saturday Night Live movies that get made, where it's funny for about 5 minutes, and that's why it works as a sketch on Saturday Night Live. Once you get past the 90-minute mark, it's like, yeah, I'm done. And that's exactly how I felt about both the Wayne's World movies, especially the second one. The second one was terrible. The first one had a few funny bits in it. The second one was terrible. You guys like those movies? Dan, you like the Wayne's World movies?
You know, the first one, I think, you know, there's that knock against Mike Myers that when he makes the first of a franchise, the first one's actually a pretty good satire of what they're trying to talk about.
Yeah.
And then it loses steam. So, you know, I thought the points they make about commercialisms in there were thoughtfully
done. Yeah, when he's like
and,
eating the Doritos and
right,
all that. Yeah,
right,
that was fun.
Right. You know, and Rob Lowe is pretty great in that movie.
Yes. So that's because Rob Lowe rules.
Rob Lowe does rule. but yeah, so, you know, like you said, the second one was just crap. But the first one, I think, you know, I enjoyed a lot.
And they were funny. They were great bits on SNL. They were great. They were really, really great bits on SNL. And if I'm not mistaken, with the exception of just a couple, I think every one of them was a cold open. I think almost every single Wayne's World that they did on SNL was a cold open. And that's a strong way. I mean, you're going to do that for a cold open every time. That's Lorne Michaels and the writers having a lot of confidence in those two characters and the setup to open the shows, you know, like that. That's a big deal. Esmeralda, where do you stand on the Wayne's World stuff?
I have not listened to anything you said because I love those movies.
Oh. Ooh.
So go away.
Oh, boy. All right. Sometimes you're wrong, Esmeralda.
Uh-huh. I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially about the second. Second one is terrible. I can give, you know, I can understand people liking the first one. Totally understand it. But the second one was awful.
Come
on. Oh.
Jim Morrison.
Oh. Yes, that was just, oh. Man. Also on this list, and I totally love this one, is Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph in Bridesmaids. Fantastic. And the great thing about that is because, you know, they're great friends off screen, are both insanely talented and funny and work magnificently together and worked really great together on SNL and everything they did. And Bridesmaid rules. That movie is just so funny, man. It's just so funny. And I remember when it came out, you know, at that point, Kristen Wiig was just like, she was like the weird one on SNL. Like she was like the weird, funny chick on SNL. And then this thing comes out. She co-writes it, gets an Oscar nomination for the script, and it becomes this box office, you know, bonanza. And then after that, it was like, oh, Kristen Wiig is awesome. Oh, yeah, we knew that. Us SNL fans knew that for many years now. And Bridesmaids is so funny. Oh, man. And then we're getting some texts about this one. Tom Hanks and Tim Allen in the Toy Story movies. Woody and Buzz. And 608 area code says that, Woody and Buzz from the Toy Story movies. Well, hell, didn't one of the songs, "Hey, You Got a Friend in Me," wasn't that one of the songs in the Toy Story movie?
Literally had their own theme song, yes.
Yeah. See, they're buddies, they're friends. Even Randy Newman says so. When Randy Newman says you're friends, you're friends. I believe that won an Oscar, if I'm not mistaken, that for best song. I think it did. Because at one point, Randy Newman was winning an Oscar every 4 months. They just started doing the ceremony every 4 months just because Randy Newman kept writing songs for movies. And they were like, just give him an award every time. All right. Also on this list, Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon in The Odd Couple, one of my favorite movies of all time. I could watch it if there was a 24-hour Odd Couple channel and all they showed was the original Odd Couple movie. I would subscribe. I love that movie. I've seen it so many times. And both of them are so unbelievably funny in that movie. And obviously great friends in real life. Work together on, what is it, maybe 6 or 7 movies? Remember when Grumpy Old Men came out? By the way, Steve Cochran is in Grumpy Old Men. And as far as I'm concerned, the highlight of Steve Cochran's career, in my opinion, is having Walter Matthau tell him to shut up, fat ass. That's Walter Matthau tells Steve Cochran to shut up, fat ass, and that is the highlight. As far as I'm concerned, Cochran will never top that. He's the best morning guy in the business, and one of my favorite people, and a great friend. But being shut up, being told to shut up, fat ass, by Walter Matthau, it doesn't get better than that.
Real quick, because I know we're up against the news, but can you tell me, I can tell the audience the story you told me in the car from one of, I think it was Matthau's appearance on The Tonight Show, and he fell through like a laundry chute or something?
Yeah, they were making this film called Buddy Buddy, and it was Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, and it was a movie that was made in the 80s, so they had already done like 5 films together at this point. It was directed by Billy Wilder, the great Billy Wilder, he had to do this stunt where he flew down a laundry chute, and there was like a big mattress, and so Billy Wilder was like, "It's no problem, you can do it. There's no way you can miss the mattress." So, you know, and at this point he's in his 60s when they made this movie. He's got to be in his 60s at this point when they make this. So he's like, "All right, I'll do it." And so Matthau goes down the laundry chute, completely misses the mattress and hits the ground, and he's all twisted up, and everybody thought he was dead. Like, the whole production stopped, and Billy Wilder went nuts. Jack Lemmon goes running down the stairs. It's like 5 flights of stairs. Goes running down the stairs, and he's laying there, like, completely, and he had broken part of his, you know, he, like, screwed up his neck, and he, like, broke part of his back. Like, he busted vertebrae in his back and everything is ultimately what happened. But they thought he was dying. And, like, he's, "Oh, my God, he's dead. We've killed Walter Matthau. He's dead." So he's laying there all twisted on the ground next to the mattresses that he was supposed to land on. And he's laying there, and Jack Lemmon takes off his jacket and balls it up and puts it under, you know, Walter Matthau's head, and slowly lifts his head up and puts the jacket under his head. And he says, and Jack Lemmon says to Walter Matthau, who's laying there, and he's holding Walter Matthau's hand, and he says, "Are you comfortable?" And Walter Matthau goes, "I make a living." The true story, Walter Matthau flies down 5 flights, hits the ground and breaks part of his back, and he's still making jokes. "Are you comfortable? I make a good living." That's such a great story, man. He told it when they were on to promote the movie. They were both on The Tonight Show on the couch at the same time, which was magnificent. Then it was just the two of them. And then he told the joke. He opened with the joke, is what he opened with, Dan. You remember the joke?
No.
He came out and he's like, "I'd like to start out this with a joke. There's 3 old men and they're in the old folks' home. And old man number 1 says, 'I used to love it when I was able to have a nice strong pee with a good stream and do a number 1 that was I could be proud of.'" Yeah, and then the old guys go, "Yeah, yeah." And then the second old man says, "You know what I miss? I miss having a nice solid BM. I like to have a good number 2, a solid number 2. That's what I miss." And this is Walter Matthau's opening statements during this interview. And then he said, "Yeah, yeah." And then the third old man says, "Well, I don't know, you know, get up, wake up 7:15 every morning. I take a nice solid a nice, solid, thick stream number one. And then I wake up at 8 o'clock every morning and I have a nice, solid BM and I do a great, solid number two. And then the other two guys go, well, what are you complaining about? And the guy, old guy says, well, I don't get out of bed till 9:30. So that's how Walter Matthau opened that interview. He told that joke, and then during the segment, he told that anecdote about falling down five flights of stairs. That's why Walter Matthau rules the planet. And those guys are great together. All right, we got a break. The news is coming up in 6 seconds.
All right. Well.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower here till 5. Triple Play Thursday, year. And that was Paul. Esmeralda, do you know that song?
No.
That was the Monkees.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was, who was I thinking of? I thought it kind of sounded like George Michael.
It didn't sound like the Monkees.
No, not at all.
That song's called Midnight from the Monkees, part of a Triple Play request from Paul. Dan, any info on when that came out? It's got to be recent, right?
No.
Maybe 80s?
It looks like it came out from, according to this YouTube description, their 1987 reunion album, Pool It. And the album features Davey and Mickey and Peter in flotation devices in a pool.
Yeah, I'm more of a fan of the earlier stuff.
Yeah. That was when they had that big resurgence, even though Nesmith wasn't a part of it, though.
Right.
But I remember they played Poplar Creek that year.
And, didn't everybody?
Yeah, and they played Poplar Creek, and like a couple of my friends went. I didn't go. They said it was actually great. They did most of the old stuff. They didn't do, I mean, maybe they did Midnight because it was a single or something, but it wasn't like they came in and said, we're going to do a bunch of new stuff. They did all the classics. They did the stuff that you want to hear.
Right.
Hey, speaking of older bands, you know who was on Jimmy Fallon last night and kicked ass with a new song? Depeche Mode.
Oh, good for them.
Oh, man, the new song rules. They got a new album coming out and they're doing a world tour. Tickets go on sale, if I'm not mistaken, Friday.
You know, I saw them play it at the Tweeter Center.
Yeah.
And I was working, and I just did not know I knew that many songs.
Oh, they rule. Depeche Mode rules. And were you able to watch them at all?
I had to have my back to.
Right.
But every time I'd be like, oh, that's you guys?
Yeah. No, Depeche Mode rules, and they're great live. And Dave Gahan is an unbelievable front man.
Roughly what year was that, Esmeralda?
Probably between 99 and 2001.
All right, cool. Because if it was the 01 show, I was there too.
And it probably was.
I had the same thing because I was working for 94.7 Zone.
Yeah, man.
As a promotions intern. But it was the same type of thing. They're like, we're going to work at a Depeche Mode concert. I'm like, oh, yeah, I know like one or two of their songs. And I'm like, oh, my God, I know a lot of their songs.
A lot of great songs,
and
man.
Like, and as you mentioned, like he was out there and he was running around the stage.
He's an unbelievable frontman. He's a great frontman, and he can dance his ass off. And they played a song last night on Fallon from the new album, which comes out, I think, next week. And it was called Where's the Revolution? And it was terrific. It was great. It was like it sounded exactly like the you know, the late 80s, early 90s Depeche Mode. Yeah. Yeah, I would love to go see him. I don't know what Dan, can you look up the date, the Chicago date for Depeche Mode? Cuz if it's on a weekend, I believe I'll go.
I think V was asking me about it and I was like, "I like them."
Oh, they're so good and they're so great live. Whose favorite band? Whose favorite band they were?
Hey, listen.
Joe loved Depeche Mode. Loved them.
Also, an ex's mother loved Depeche Mode.
One of your ex's mothers?
Yes. She was real cool, though.
Yeah, well, she obviously,
liked Depeche Mode.
If she liked Depeche Mode, she was cool.
Unfortunately, it looks like it is going to be a Wednesday night.
Why? Where are they playing?
The Hollywood Casino Amphitheater.
No, come
in
on.
Finley Park.
You can.
Oh, that's what it's called now?
Yeah.
If you go, you can go hang out with my mom. and my dad.
All right.
You can have dinner at the Leons, and then you can head over.
That's what it's called now? It's called the Hollywood Casino...
The theater.
Amphitheater?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just pictured that they were going to be like on a...
At the Hollywood Casino?
Yeah. That's what I was like, why would they play there?
Although very close. There's one in Joliet.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying that the tweeters, the whatever the hell it's called, Hollywood Casino place is much bigger, and that's where they should play, is what I'm saying. You know? So, all right. Anyway, Wednesday night. Why would they book a Chicago show on Wednesday? You do Charlotte on a Wednesday. You don't do Chicago on a Wednesday.
They're playing Connecticut on that Friday.
Come on, that's not fair. Nobody lives in Connecticut.
You would think about their fan base.
Who's
going out on a Wednesday night?
God.
At least a Thursday.
Come on, man. Do it. Maybe they'll do a second leg of the tour if the album takes off. The album is called Spirit, by the way, the new Depeche. People are learning more about Depeche Mode than they've ever wanted to know. You know, the very first time I ever saw Depeche Mode was in, like, I want to say it was 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at Poplar Creek, and Joe, my late buddy Joe, who we refer to here as, hey, listen, because that's what he would say every time he would start a conversation, just to make sure you were listening. Hey, listen. He's like, hey, listen, we got to go see Depeche Mode. And I was like, I don't want to see Depeche Mode. You know, I mean, I liked them at that time, but I really grew to like them more as the 80s went on and into the 90s. Like, by the time Personal Jesus came out, they were like one of my favorite bands of all time. So anyway, I'm like, all right, I'll go with you, you know. Yeah, we'll just go out. I'll get some blankets. We'll get some lawn seats. We'll sit on the lawn. I'm like, all right. So I convinced one of my best friends. I'm like, John, you got to come with me. I don't want to go see Depeche Mode alone with Joe because he's going to be dancing around, you know, and I'm just going to kind of sit there and he's going to be flopping around on the floor. So my friend John's like, yeah, okay, we'll go. So we get the blankets and everything. We park the car. This was back when you know, parking was included. Like you didn't have to pay for parking. It was like included in the ticket when you bought your ticket. So you just park the car and then you walk. So we walk to Poplar Creek and we've got our blankets and stuff. And Joe goes, hey, listen, let's just see on a whim if there are any tickets available in the pavilion. And I'm like, oh, God. All right. Because your tickets, like lawn tickets at that time, I think were like 10, 12 bucks or something, you know. So we're like, all right, whatever. See if you got pavilion seats. And this was the day, I mean, literally about, I don't know, 90 minutes before the show. So we go up to the, you know, we're waiting in line for a couple minutes. We walk up and Joe goes, hey, listen, to the person in the booth there. We're just wondering, do you got any pavilion seats available? And the person's like, well, how many do you need? Three. And a couple seconds go by and she goes, yeah, we got first row center. And Joe goes, what? And he starts to lose his mind. And and she's like, yeah, we have three seats, first row center. And he turns around, he looks at us like, please, 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 can we get the tickets? Can we please not sit on the lawn? He just had that look in his eyes, and we both look at each other and go, okay, Joe, just get the tickets. He's like, oh, please. And then he turns around, we will take those tickets. So, you know, face value, they weren't scalped. We probably paid 25 bucks for them. And the first time I ever saw Depeche Mode.
Wait, each?
Yeah.
Total?
No, 25 bucks each. I would imagine.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't that be about right in 1985?
I know, but it just seems cheap.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. So it was face value. So we get the tickets, and we're like, oh, and Joe's beside himself. Joe is beside himself. He's like skipping back to the car to put the blankets back in the car. And he's all, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And it was, you know, and first of all, it was great. The show was great. And being next to Joe during this show and watching him just like in awe, standing at the edge of the stage, almost crying during every song. Then this is the topper. All right, and the reason why we ended up with those tickets, Dan, is because the radio station that was sponsoring them didn't give them away, so they were left over. Like it was for a radio contest that some DJ forgot to do. So that's why there were three front row center tickets left 90 minutes before the show because some moron DJ didn't go, hey, be caller number 12, yeah, didn't do that. So we were able to get those tickets. Now, here's the killer right here. the greatest part of the story. We're in the front row, okay? And Joe is like beside himself as they're playing all of their hits up until that point. They had a lot of hits in 80 up until that point, 85. People Are People, and they had a bunch of hits at that point. So Martin Gore, who is not the lead singer, he's the keyboard player and plays guitar, and he's like the head songwriter. Like Martin Gore is the guy, he's the main songwriter in Depeche Mode. He comes down to the side of the stage, and there's a guy who runs up and gives him a rose, gives him a white rose, because he loves him so much. So, you know, Martin Gore takes it and shakes his head and thank you. So that happens. Then later in the show, we're all standing up. He comes down like during like one of the before their encores. Everybody's giving him a standing ovation. Everybody's clapping. Joe is jumping up and down like a 6-year-old because this is the greatest thing that's ever happened in my life. So during the clapping and everything, Martin Gore comes down, walks to the end of the stage, bends over and hands the rose to my friend John. John takes the rose and goes, "Did I just get hit on by Martin Gore?" I said, "I think you did. The dude just gave you a rose, man." And he re-gifted it. He re-gifted a rose to you. So we went there expecting to sit on the lawn and just wait till Joe was finished dancing. We ended up in the front row, and my friend John got a rose from Martin Gore. That was the first time I ever saw Depeche Mode, and I've seen him like 12 times since then. So... all right, we got a break here. We got best. Well, that was a story about best friends. It didn't really have anything to do with TV and movies, but those guys were my best friends. Oh, so stupid. All right, we got a break here. We got weather and we got traffic. I don't know this song either. That's the Monkees. Esmeralda, do you know Don't Bring Me Down?
I do not.
I know Don't Bring Me Down by ELO. That's not this song. Is that from the same album? Is that from Pool It?
That is correct, yes.
All right, Pool It. Esmeralda, I guess we got to go out and buy Pool It.
I guess so.
Is Nick DiGilio?
You should also see the video, apparently, where they took over an Ed DeBevix to perform this song.
That's pretty good. Ed DeBevix, that's where Foot Cheese did his first remote from. All right. It's Nick DiGilio. Hi, everybody. We're talking about great friends in movies and TV. A ton of texts. I got to get to them because I'm getting behind on them. 608 area code. So it's one of the greatest TV and movie friendships was the original Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. Even if you don't like the movies, they were a great trio. All three of them, yeah, but especially Kirk and Spock. Especially Kirk and Spock. And especially in Wrath of Khan when Spock dies. Oh, man. I showed that at my film club about 2 months after Leonard Nimoy passed away. And the whole place was, there wasn't a dry eye in the theater. Everybody was going nuts. 847 area code, Lloyd Christmas and Harry Dunn from Dumb and Dumber. That movie is funny. That is a funny movie, Dumb and Dumber. Esmeralda, do you like Dumb and Dumber?
I do like Dumb and Dumber.
Did you see Dumb and Dumber 2?
Dumb and Dumberer?
No, that was a sequel as well. No, it was a prequel. That was when Harry met Lloyd, when Lloyd met Harry. And it wasn't Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. It was two other idiots.
Oh, I did not.
Horrible.
Did not.
Dumb and Dumber 2, which is the actual sequel, with Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels, is okay. It's not great. It's not nearly as funny as the first one. I'm telling you, man, when they sell that bird to the blind kid, I nearly peed my pants. I was laughing so hard. and I have to say this, the scene where the laxative kicks in and Jeff Daniels has to use the toilet is one of those. I'm telling you, every time I see that scene, I think it's some of the greatest acting that Jeff Daniels has ever done. That's a great movie. 708 area code, Beanie and Cecil. Oh, you guys are too young to remember Beanie and Cecil, right?
Yeah, who's that?
Correct.
It's a cartoon where it's like a kid and his best buddy is a dinosaur, and he and Beanie wears a beanie, and Cecil is a dinosaur, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe the dinosaur wears a beanie. I can't remember. Dan, can you look up a visual of Beanie and Cecil? I just remember it was a kid and his favorite buddy, a dinosaur. And it was popular like in the 60s and early 70s. So, 563 area code says Venus Flytrap and Dr. Johnny Fever from KRP. It's a good one. 630 area code, Sean and Gus from the show Psych. That's one of those shows on the USA Network that evidently millions of people watch, but nobody I know has ever seen an episode of it. Esmeralda, do you remember the bit they did on SNL like about 10 years ago? And the it was a game show parody, and the name of the game show was, "What is Burn Notice?" And they had people on, and every question was, "What is Burn Notice?" And the people had no idea what it was. And Bill Hader was the host, and he's like, "Evidently, it's the third most popular show on cable, so what is Burn Notice?" And nobody knew what it was. Did you get a visual on Beanie and Cecil?
Yes, I do have a visual of them. Wikipedia confirms Beanie Boy was a young, cupid-faced boy with propeller beanie.
Right.
And Cecil was actually a seasick sea serpent.
And he had very beautiful eyelashes.
Yes, he did. Yes. You see, this is what I had to watch when I was a kid, because the people who made kids programming in the 60s and 70s were high. They were just stoned completely. Like, yeah, it'd be a good idea to have a kid with a seasick sea serpent, big eyelashes, and put a beanie on the kid's head. It'll be fantastic.
I feel sad that I never got to experience the villain Dishonest John. It's a bit on the nose.
Yeah, the mystery there is not. That's not part of Beanie and Cecil, man. There's no mystery there. He's dishonest. His name is John, and he's dishonest. 847 area code. Harry Potter, Ron, and Hermione. That's a great one. 610 area code says Tombstone, Doc, and Wyatt. Yeah, that was great. And you know who else is in Tombstone? Bill Paxton is in Tombstone. And then he rules in Tombstone. Val Kilmer played Doc Holliday in that movie. I'll be your Huckleberry. That's such a good movie. Kurt Russell. That movie rules. Powers Booth is in that. Michael Biehn is in that movie. That movie rules. I haven't seen that one in a while. When's the last time you watched Tombstone? It's
probably a year or two after it came out.
Man. Esmeralda, have you ever seen Tombstone?
I haven't.
Oh, man. It rules. 708 area code picks Jay and Silent Bob. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. 920 area code, one of my favorites of all time. The guys from Shaun of the Dead, Nick Frost, and Simon Pegg. One of my favorite movies ever in the history of anything. And those guys are a great example of fantastic, fantastic friends. And it ends with "You're My Best Friend." The closing credits of the movie, they play the Queen song "You're My Best Friend." After Ed tries to eat Sean when they're playing the video game, when he's all chained up in the shed. That movie's great. All right, we got a break. We got the news coming up, and then we got more best friends in TV and movies. I got a list here. Plus, we're getting a ton of texts. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. News is coming up next. I hope that you'll be standing up. Yeah. From the classic album Pool It. I'm assuming this is from Pool It, Dan.
It might not be. This looks like it's a different one. It's from the Best Of album, apparently.
Okay. Well, that's the Monkees, even though it doesn't sound anything like the Monkees. Paul's request for Triple Play Thursday, anytime, any place, anywhere. It's not from Pool It. Okay. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about great friendships and friend characters in TV and movies. And got a bunch of texts here that we're going to get to. And let me fly down a few of these TV ones. Marion Rhoda from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. We got a couple of texts on that as well. Laverne and Shirley from Laverne and Shirley. Texts on that, too. Miranda, Carey, Samantha, and Charlotte from Sex and the City. Blanche, Rose, Dorothy, and Sophia from The Golden Girls. Meredith and Christina from Grey's Anatomy. Are they all dead now? Are those two people dead now on that show? Because everybody's dead on that show, right, Dan? Didn't everybody die on Grey's Anatomy? They kill everybody every week. They kill somebody.
Except for Meredith.
Meredith is still... Is Christina dead?
No, but she left the show.
Sandra Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Monica, Phoebe, and Rachel and Friends. Well, what about the other guys? Are they not friends?
They're listed later.
Oh. So the three...
Which I thought was odd.
All six of them should be listed, don't you think?
Well, it's odd because they don't specify the three guys. They only say Chandler and Joey. Was that a choice?
So nobody likes Ross?
Apparently so. Was that a choice you made?
Yeah.
When you were developing
it? When I was developing the show, I wanted Ross to be his only friend was a monkey.
That's right.
Well, the show's called Friends. Shouldn't all six of them be, I mean.
That's why I thought it was odd.
I mean, that's a little weird, right?
I'm with you.
Classic right here, Lucy and Ethel, and I Love Lucy. Michael and Dwight in The Office. Were they really friends? I mean, wasn't one just an incompetent boss and the other a butt kisser? Were they really?
Sometimes that's all you need.
Nick and Schmidt on New Girl. Yeah. Yeah. Veronica and Wallace and Veronica Mars. God, I used to love that show. Jerry and George on Seinfeld. So they're just Kramer and Elaine don't count? I know Jerry and George. Yeah, I guess they're best friends.
I was going to say, I don't think Elaine really liked George, right? She liked him, but...
She put up with him.
Yeah.
I think most people, except for Jerry, just put up with him.
Yeah.
You know?
He's part of the package, I guess.
Yeah. On the Bizarro, in the Bizarro Jerry episode, where Elaine meets four guys or three guys who are the exact opposite of Jerry but are close enough.
Yeah.
And they go to a different diner, you know, and but they act, you know, but completely the opposite.
Yeah.
And at one point, they both meet, the groups meet on the street, the Bizarro Jerry group with mm-hmm. the Bizarro Jerry and Seinfeld and then the regular guys. And Elaine chooses to go with the Bizarro Jerry group because they're actually nice guys and not screw-ups and morons. And as they're walking away, George goes, Elaine, can I come with you? And then she kind of looks over at them and looks back at him and goes, I'm sorry, we've already got a George. I never watched The O.C. Seth and Ryan. Did you ever watch The O.C.?
Didn't.
Dan, you?
Nope.
Okay. Fred and Barney on the Flintstones. Can't believe that didn't come up earlier because they like to share Winston cigarettes. Oh, man. I can't believe I didn't jump on this one immediately. Blair and Serena from Gossip Girl. Come on. Fantastic. And Rory and Lorelai from Gilmore Girls. Yeah, they were friends. Joey and Dawson from Dawson's Creek. Okay. And then Joey and Chandler from Friends, because nobody liked Ross, evidently.
No, no one did.
No one liked Ross. Well, then what's her face? Marry him at the end?
Yeah, no.
Didn't they get married? Or no, she came back from the hotel, or not the hotel, the airport.
They got drunkenly married.
Right.
And I don't know if they did get divorced, but in the end it was kind of just because she had a kid with him, and I think that was the best
they could
do.
I mean, the cliffhanger was, is she going to come back from the airport? Was that the thing?
Right. And she did.
And they end up together. All right.
And Rod and Lee Moon was there.
Well, then that makes it good.
And he went, yes, I guess I approve. I'm Rob Liebman.
Yeah.
Ron Liebman.
Ron Liebman. So I guess that was a good episode. If Ron Liebman was in it, it was good. That's how it works. Tina and Amy from Saturday Night Live. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Karen and Jack on Will and Grace. And I've always said that show should have been called Karen and Jack and not Will and Grace.
I mean, if they would have gotten rid of Will and Grace, it would have been fine.
Exactly. Karen, they were hilarious.
Did you see it's coming back?
Yeah. Those are very. I mean, I like the whole show. I think everybody is great. It's a great show. But the scenes, Karen and Jack were the scene stealers. And Sean, why am I blanking on his last name? Sean, how can I be blanking on his last name? Because I love him so much. You got Megan Mullally and Sean Hayes.
There you go.
That guy is so enormously talented, Sean Hayes. Like, seriously, incredibly talented. Can do anything. He can. He's a musician. He can sing. He can dance. Mm-hmm. He can do drama. He can do comedy. That sitcom that he just had was pretty bad, though. The Sean Hayes show was pretty bad. But
I think I tried watching it. I went, I don't know. No,
it's not good. It's not good. It wasn't good, which is too bad because that guy is just, he's, Sean Hayes is the
deal. It was like a live audience.
Yeah, it was a sitcom.
Thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It was not good. But I will say this. I think he's only hosted once. He was unbelievable on Saturday Night Live. Like his episode of SNL. His monologue was fantastic. He was great in all the sketches. It was, I just remember it being one of the best. I want to say it. He hosted like in 99 or 2000.
Yeah.
Because Will Ferrell, you know, was in the cast. Then Jimmy Fallon.
Okay.
Horatio Sands. And it was, they had, when they were in the, it, one of the episodes where they're in that snooty department store and they insult the customers. And Jimmy Fallon's got the bad hair and they.
Oh, is it the one and he has a little tiny cell phone?
A little teeny cell phone. Yeah, that's it. That's Sean Hayes is in that single sketch. That's,
oh, okay.
I mean, that was a, it was a recurring sketch. They did it a bunch of times. But that was the one where he comes out like on a scooter really slow.
I think I remember that.
And he backs the scooter up and it makes that deet, deet, deet noise. And Sean Hayes and Jimmy Fallon. Well, Jimmy Fallon would lose it in every sketch.
Yeah.
But he would break and then Sean Hayes broke. And it was the third time during the sketch they broke because Horatio Sands came out. And those two idiots, Fallon and Sands, they couldn't be in a scene together without, you know, breaking. He came in with a Warner Brothers leather jacket on from the Warner Brothers studio store. Mm-hmm. and he's like, why don't you just get out of here right now? And they tell him, you know, they tell him to leave. And he's like, hey, buddy, I think Sean Hayes says, or Jimmy Fallon says, hey, why don't you go eat the rest of your sandwich that you've left over in Subway in your Dodge Dart. And he goes, well, and Horatio Sands goes, I got news for you, pal. I got a half-eaten taco in my Tercel. And then they both lose it. He's wearing that stupid Warner Brothers jacket. Oh, Sean Hayes is great. All right, let's see. We got Dan on WGN. Hey, Dan.
Yes.
Yes.
That's a little off point, but you mentioned that Western Tombstone.
Yes.
My brother was in Quick and the Dead with Gene Hackman as one of the henchmen.
Is that right?
Dale from Rockford, Illinois, yes.
Oh, all right. I didn't know that.
So now that I've seen.
You've seen Quick and the Dead.
I've seen Quick and the Dead.
You know why? Because Leo's in it.
No. Because of, what's his name? The other one.
Russell Crowe?
Yes. Because at the time.
Oh, yeah. He was.
Virtuosity.
Yeah, no, he was a good looking man then. Mm-hmm. He's a bit puffy now, but
yeah,
he's
a little bloated.
Yeah. All right, Dan, thanks for the info and congratulations on your cousin being in The Quick and the Dead. Or his brother.
Yeah.
Brother. But you saw, but Leo was, he just finished.
I think he was more into.
But wasn't that after Romeo and Juliet when that came out? Like right around the same time.
It was very much just Romeo and Juliet, and that was it.
No Titanic.
And Basketball Diaries. It was weird. I went backwards.
So you like Romeo and Juliet, Basketball Diaries, and then after that,
and
forget
I
it.
Liked, I saw A Boy's Life, and I really enjoyed him.
He's good in that movie.
But Titanic, I was like, no, I'm out.
He's so good in this Boy's Life. Because I didn't know him from the sitcoms that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I vividly remember the first time I saw this Boy's Life, and I was like, who is this kid?
Leo.
He's amazing in that movie. Him and De Niro?
Yeah.
Come on. Maybe every time I come home, I put my hand on the TV and it's warm. De Niro wearing the stupid Boy Scout costume.
I feel so bad for Leo.
Oh, man. Is this mustard empty at the end of the movie? They get into that big fist fight and De Niro bites his finger. It's been cut. Oh, that movie rules. That movie rule. If you've not seen This Boy's Life, man. You should. All right, let's see. We got Mike here on WGN with more. Mike, you got Beanie and Cecil info?
Yeah, actually, it's a show from the early days of television created by one of the veterans of Warner Brothers' Termite Terrace, Bob Clampett.
Oh, and he, did Bob Clampett created that?
Yeah, Bob Clampett created that as a puppet show initially. And eventually, by late 50s, it became a cartoon show into the 60s. Now, when I was a kid, that was in the 60s. I don't remember it surviving into the 70s.
But. It was in reruns, trust me. I remember.
Okay.
I remember. It was the early 70s. It was when I was real young.
Okay. Bob Clampett was the...
I had no idea that that was Bob Clampett. No idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Beanie and Cecil. One of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
Tombstone. Man, I couldn't stand that Western.
Really?
Boy's Life. Boy's Life is a great movie.
Yeah. Boy's Life is a great movie. It is.
Yeah.
It is. All right, Mike. Take care, man.
Take it easy.
All right. The thing about Tombstone is that it was one of two Wyatt Earp movies that came out in the same year. Because you had Kurt Russell playing Wyatt Earp, and then you had Kevin Costner playing Wyatt Earp. And the Kevin Costner Wyatt Earp movie was like over 3 hours long.
Oh, boy.
And Dennis Quaid played Doc Holliday in that. And the thing about Tombstone is, like, the movie Wyatt Earp, mm-hmm. 3 hour movie, you know, it's prestigious. Lawrence Kasdan wrote and directed it. Tombstone was like 90 minutes long, directed by the guy who did Rambo.
Nice.
And it had nothing but badasses in it. So that's why I prefer Tombstone. It's just the entire cast, man. You got Powers Booth, Bill Paxton, Michael Biehn, Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, all in one movie. And it's 90 minutes long, and it's directed by the dude who directed Rambo. I'll take that one over the prestigious three-hour movie directed by the guy who directed The Big Chill. Please. All right, some of the other Friends stuff here. Chim Chim and Spritel, of course. We were in the trunk of the Mach 5.
Right.
Yeah.
They never got hurt.
Yeah, well, no, because like, and I've always said this, the opening credits of Speed Racer, just during the opening credits every day.
Mowing people down.
There's just 5,500 deaths. And there's cars exploding. People. It's just ridiculous. I used to like it when Speed would be behind the wheel and he'd suddenly panic and go, ah, and he'd like sweat.
Yeah.
But his mouth was always open. Ah, yeah. And he'd be spinning the wheel. I used to watch that show. Completely inappropriate for young children because 43 people die in the opening credits. let's see. 847 area code. Smokey and the Bandit. Okay. Are you talking about? You got to be talking about Jerry Reed and Burt Reynolds then, because they weren't friends. Smokey and the Bandit were not friends. They were enemies. Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. That's a good one. Thelma and Louise. Let's see. The Skipper and Gilligan. I always thought that the Skipper was mean to Gilligan. Well, Gilligan was an idiot.
He was, but, you know.
But Gilligan was an idiot.
He was mean out of love and frustration. Wouldn't you be? You're on an island with that moron. But deep down, you like him.
Yeah. Sean in Wisconsin says Tom Hanks and Rick Dukeman from The Burbs. Fantastic. That's such a great movie. Have you ever seen The Burbs?
I have, but a long time ago.
Oh, it's so good. One of my favorite Joe Dante movies. Let's see. Cheech and Chong. Oh, sure.
Right.
They're buddies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Swayze and the other badasses in Roadhouse.
Wouldn't it? Oh, I guess he was friends with the blind musician.
Yeah, Jeff Healey.
Right.
Yeah.
But I would say more with Sam Elliott.
Oh, yeah. Mentor. He was mm-hmm. his mentor.
Yeah.
He rules. Sam Elliott rules in that movie. He rules in everything. How about Point Break with Bodie in Utah, speaking of Swayze?
Is that really Friends, though?
Oh, yeah. He wouldn't shoot him. He had the chance to take out Bodie, and he didn't do it because he loved him so much.
Was that more just out of respect?
He loved him. Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. Richie Cunningham and the Fonz. CC and Hillary from Beaches. I don't know what that means.
From Beaches.
Bette Midler and what's her face? Barbara Hershey.
Yes.
Okay. How about this from the movie Step Brothers? Did we just become best friends?
Yeah.
Yep. I like when they build the bunk bed. How about when they're just bringing presents up? The parents are trying to sleep. Mary Steenburgen and Richard Jenkins are trying to sleep, and they're walking in with. They're bringing in presents for each other. That movie's hilarious.
No, that one's a good movie.
That is a good movie. All right, let's find out what's coming up on the opening bell with Steve Grzanich. Hey, Steve.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Hey, morning.
Coming up next, we're going to check in on world markets. Yesterday, the stock market hit 21,000. We'll see if the rest of the world is having as much happy times and good times as Wall Street is with a regular thought leader conversation with Associated Bank coming up next.
Okay.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
All right, a couple more real quick ones. Starsky and Hutch.
Mm-hmm.
George and Lenny from Of Mice and Men. Yeah, that ends happily. And then finally, here's a good one. Nicolas Cage and Matthew Modine in the movie Birdie, which not a lot of people have seen, but a great movie and a great performance by both those guys. So there you go. All right, Esmeralda, we'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we'll see you then. All right, the news is coming up next.